The Dharma reveals surely the nature of existence. But the nature of existence, we've been told, is inconceivable. And if it's inconceivable, it is also inexpressible. How then is it possible for the Dharma to be taught? With this question, we get quite close to the unfamiliar world of the Vimalakirti Nirdesha. We do really start to experience the magic of a Mahayana sutra or text. Existence is inconceivable, not to be fathomed by thought. Because it is inconceivable, it is inexpressible, not to be uttered in words. The Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, therefore, even the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas cannot really teach the Dharma in words. So how do they teach it? If they can't teach it in words, well, they demonstrate it. They demonstrate it in action. In particular, they demonstrate it by means of magical action. We'll encounter some actual examples of this magical action in a few minutes' time when we make our rapid survey of the whole text. After all, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are perfectly enlightened, or at least they're spiritually advanced beings, and as such, they're in possession, according to Buddhist tradition, of all sorts of magical powers. From this point onwards, I must warn you, it begins to sound a little bit like what I've sometimes called transcendental science fiction. In particular, these Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are able to move things from place to place. They're able to create things. And they're able to transform themselves into the likeness of anything they wish. And moreover, they're able to do all this on a cosmic scale. They're able to move universes from one side of the, whatever you like to call it, to the other. So at this point, I think we need to consider the significance of magic from the Mahayana point of view. That is to say, its, so to speak, philosophical significance. Only then we'll be able to understand what the Mahayana means when it compares existence to a magic show. And only then will we be able to understand why it's possible for the Vimalakirti Nirdesha to regard magical acts as being demonstrations of the Dharma. Magic, as you perhaps know, was very popular in ancient India. I believe it still is. And it seems that the Indians have always been rather good at magic. They produced quite a large number of magicians. In fact, they've had a reputation for that sort of thing, even in foreign countries, even in ancient times. But what exactly do we mean by magic in this connection? So let me give you a little example, a very ordinary example, a very homely sort of example. All right, you're in ancient India. You're in a village in ancient India. And one day, one morning, along comes a magician. Yes, a real, live, itinerant magician. Whether he arrives on his flying carpet or not, we don't know. Perhaps he just pretends, you know, to walk into the village. But anyway, the magician arrives in the village. And of course, as soon as he arrives, a drum starts to beat. It's announced that something is going to happen, and people all gather around, all eager and expectant. In fact, if a magician was to walk in here, into this very hall, this very minute, you'd all gather around. You'd forget all about the lecture. You'd forget all about the lecture, and quite rightly too, because you're going to have a lecture, well, any week. But you may not be able to see a magical display every week. But anyway, the people would gather round. And then what would the magician do? Well, more often than not, he'd do something quite routine, quite ordinary. the sort of thing that magicians are expected to do. He'd conjure up an elephant. So there in front of everybody would be the elephant, as large as life. Legs, bulky body, tail, trunk, flapping ears, calmly standing there. Everybody would see that elephant. It would appear instantly, just like that, as soon as the magician repeated his mantra, because the Indians also believed that things of this sort are done with the help of mantras. Yeah? So there's the elephant. So I won't say life-like, because it would be life itself. An elephant is there. In fact, some people in the audience might even get afraid and run away. So this is the sort of thing that used to happen, and apparently it still happens in India. Magicians do this sort of thing. So the Mahayana takes up this sort of experience. The experience of, let us say, the magically created elephant, or house, or tree, or people, whatever it might be. We'd, of course, call it a collective hallucination, but let that pass. The Mahayana would proceed to point out that the elephant, which was perceived, which was experienced by all those village people, was not absolutely unreal, but neither was it absolutely non-existent. After all, everybody had seen it. You can't deny the testimony of your own eyes. Everybody in the village had seen it, and they knew perfectly well what an elephant looked like. And there was an elephant standing in front of them. So they'd all seen it. Not only had they seen it, it had actually produced effects, because some people had run away. But at the same time, the Mahayana also pointed out, the elephant was not absolutely real, not absolutely existent, because after all, the magician has created it, and eventually he would make it disappear. So according to the Mahayana, existence, ordinary existence, as we experience it, as we perceive it, is just like this. The dharmas are just like this. They're neither existent, nor are they non-existent. That is to say, neither absolutely existent, nor absolutely non-existent. And because they're neither existent nor non-existent, they cannot be said really to appear or really to disappear. They're just like the magical illusion. Existence is just like the magical illusion, or if you like a great collective hallucination. It's also compared to an echo, a dream, a mirage, and a ball of foam. And the point of the comparison is not that something is perceived to exist, but that it is not really there. That is not the point of the comparison. The point of the comparison is that something is perceived to exist, but that that existence is not absolute. There's nothing wrong, the Mahayana says, with our perception, nothing wrong with our experience. What is wrong is our conceptual interpretation of our experience. In particular, our interpretation of our experience in terms of entities, in terms of fixed, solid, unchanging things. The Mahayana does not doubt our experience. It does not question our experience. What it questions is the ultimate validity of the conceptual constructions which we superimpose upon our experience. So we can now begin to see why it is possible for the Vimalakirti Nirdesha to regard magical acts as being demonstrations of the Dharma. It is because magical creations are themselves an illustration of what existence is really like. We could say a lot more on this topic, but it's time we passed on to our rapid survey of the Vimalakirti Nirdesha itself.